Eastern Conference grades time here. This will be an interesting one. And actually, I mean, last year we talked about this, Danny, that we gave a ton of Fs in the East, some of which we modified. This year, I wasn't nearly as down on the East, but it also seems, other than Toronto, to be really a static offseason for this Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, like, even there were a couple teams that got particularly high grades from me, and they were really low stakes, you know, other than Toronto, they were low stakes, like low means summers that teams did well. So that's a little bit different than, you know, having max space and making a big swing and hitting it out of the park or something like that. Still a good offseason, and that's why we grade it that way. But yeah, it was different, and there were fewer negative grades. And so just because I want to say this at the outset, and people always have trouble with this, a C is an average grade, and we have a little bit of a difference in terms of philosophy here. I think of this as organizational, and for me, it's not necessarily it's not always about the outcome. Like, I got into this, people got mad at me with the whole LeBron thing. It's kind of like how you do with the means that you have, and the constraints and all that kind of stuff. So I don't ding a team as much if a player just doesn't want to go there. And I sometimes, if it's obvious that a player was going to go somewhere, I don't give them as much credit. But there isn't as much of that in the Eastern Conference because there weren't a lot of high-profile free agents that signed in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I'll blame you for the guy who tweeted at me today saying, I knew based on Danny having something about the Warriors in his
Oh
Twitter
no,
profile.
they also use subjectivity instead of objectivity, which I
Yes,
thought was great.
yes. He's like, you can't be subjective.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was that was actually the dumbest tweet I've ever gotten, I think. But that's okay. Let's get started here with the Atlanta Hawks. This one I think is the most volatile, at least as far as like how it might look a year from now, and certainly 3, 4 years from now. I would guess, because I predicted that I think Trae Young is going to be very good, but he's a very high volatility player, very polarizing player, and also one whom I expect to really struggle early in his career. But of course, the centerpiece of their offseason was the trade number three, which became Luka Doncic. I think that I had some tweets with someone about that, who that appears to be the closest that I can personally get myself to pronounce. But if I'm wrong there, let me know. And then the number five owned by Dallas, which was Trae Young, and then a 2019 top five protected first rounder. What is your grade just for that trade, Danny?
So I had that as a negative, but not a huge negative, because I like Doncic better, but Trae Young, you know, the difference between those guys, this is again paralleling the trade that the Celtics made with Tatum. The difference for the Celtics between Tatum and Fultz was smaller than for the Sixers. Same here. So a slight negative, so maybe like a C minus, D plus, something in that range, but definitely below average, because I think that Dallas did better in it. I had Luka number one in this draft. So if you can get the number one guy, that makes a difference.
Yeah, and I had Young number two, which is far higher than many others had him, obviously. So, I mean, pretty much they did a bunch of other stuff around the margin, some of which I liked, some of which was a little weird. But, you know, that's got to comprise the majority of this grade. I mean, I think, though, that the process of the Trae Young thing was good, right? I mean, they had their guy that they believed was the best, and they were able to trade down and pick up a very juicy assets for dropping down two spots. If we were simply talking about, and KP made this point earlier, if we're talking about your average number three pick and your average number five pick, they did extremely well in terms of getting that 2019 pick. Now, there's so many more considerations there, right? There's the players in particular involved. And then there's also the fact that, or I shouldn't say the fact, but the opinion that the 2019 draft won't be as good, that many draft experts seem to hold, including me, at least based on seeing the Hoop Summit. I wasn't really wowed by anyone there. So both in terms of their process and in terms of just getting value based on the picks at that level, and there's certainly something to be said for the idea that, hey, you know, it's just based on the draft is a crapshoot, and just, you know, the value of a pick is what you should be basing it on here, not whether you happen to like that guy at three or at five or not. So I'm probably a little better on that than you. I mean, I think I would probably say that just overall is a C. What did they do besides that?
So they were really active. They drafted Kevin Huerter and Omari Spellman, neither of whom we watched video on. Huerter missed summer league. Spellman, to me, looked like kind of a man without a country. You compared him to Mo Spates, which I think is fair in terms of, like, I mean, we'll see what his career becomes. But there is a lot of Spates in there. Then they acquired Jeremy Lin without getting anything in return, which I think was a negative value for them, not only because of Lin's price tag, but also because of his injury history. I like Jeremy Lin. I just think that him at, I think it's about $12 million is a lot. That's a lot of Jeremy Lin.
And you throw in that there's no point to him either. I mean, with this team clearly not going to be in playoff contention.
Yeah, but he's a mentor point guard. You don't need to pay $12 million for a mentor point guard. We talked about that. He's better than, you know, I think he'll, at healthy, provide more value than Vince Carter did last year for the Kings. But, I mean, that you don't need a player at that price range. And those are big. But then the biggest move other than the young Doncic move was the Melo trade. And so what they did there was they took on Carmelo Anthony's big payment for the 18-19 season in exchange for getting off of Dennis Schroeder and getting a protected 2022 Oklahoma City first round pick. They also got Justin Anderson in that deal, and they traded. Oh, so yeah, they did get Justin Anderson. That was in that trade, yeah. I believe. And then Mike Muscala. Yeah, because that was a three teamer.
Yeah.
So I gave them. So I said I gave them like a C- for the trade. I gave them a C- overall for the offseason because I thought those moves were overall a positive, but not enough of a positive to justify, because I didn't like the Lin part of it, but I really liked the Melo Schroeder part for them. And that overall, I thought they did fine. You know, C-, that's slightly below average. And when you trade away, when you had the opportunity to draft the number one guy in the class who would have been a wonderful fit for their roster, you know, there wasn't that issue here. We're like, oh, where are they going to play Luka? No, he would have been a long-term starter for them had he been good enough. So that's why it was a C- for me.
Yeah, how are we ever going to find space on our 27-win tank fest team for Luka Doncic? But that said, I was higher on that trade. I'm higher on Young than you are. And then I really liked the Melo trade, getting off of Schroeder and being able to get an asset as well for him. I thought was good. Now, they did have to absorb about $12 million or so in dead salary this year. I mean, it really was just a very odd offseason. I mean, that Lin trade was just so bad to me. I mean, just think of whether it was making a play long term to try to get someone on your roster who can be a part of things, whether it's taking on more dead salary, whether it's simply just saving ownership $12 million. I mean, maybe the part of Lin is the marketing aspect, but I don't think that, you know, it's not like Atlanta has this enormous Asian population and, like, you know, he's going to drive ratings there or something. It seems unlikely to me. So I don't really get, like, what the point is. Even if that's it, you know, you're not going to make that money back. So that was just an utter head scratcher. You know, it would have been great if they could have picked up some more assets there, but they finally got the first rounder. The protection on both the Dallas pick and the OKC pick, remember the OKC pick is lottery protected for only 1 year and then turns into 2 seconds. I wish they could have done just a little bit better. You know, maybe even just to get it top four protected, which is, you know, where you jump into. I'm talking about the Dallas pick now, to get that top four protected instead of top five. You know, that would have been nice too. So overall, I gave them a B. Just getting off a Schroeder, I thought was great. Getting the asset for him, and then, you know, taking on $12 million in bad money for 1 year. They even got like a pretty good buyout for Melo too, so it really ended up only being an extra $10 million. So that's a pretty good price for just $10 million in bad salary, and you get off of someone we thought was a little bit of bad salary in terms of Schroeder and went on for a long time and was someone who would have been probably a bad influence in their locker room that wasn't in their plans anymore. I thought that was great. And then the Young trade, you know, I thought was reasonable. So that's why I ended up with a B. But I mean, this is one where so much of this is eye of the beholder, and you could easily, a year from now, I could have them with a D. You could even have them with an F if Trae Young just turns out to be terrible and Doncic is a superstar, which is not remotely out of the realm of possibility.
It's going to take a lot less time to. One other thing I want to mention, just in terms of the money that they got, this will come up later, but Brooklyn got a protected second round pick just for taking on $2 million in Jared Dudley. So think about what Atlanta could have done with any part of that money.
Yeah, that was a very outlier type of situation, though.
It was anomalous. Yeah, that's certainly fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one. I mean, I think that's probably, I mean, since like Anthony Randolph, nobody's gotten a second round pick for taking on that little money. I mean, you could go back to like Pondexter last year, but even that was like $3 million, I think. And it was totally dead. I mean, that was just a weird situation. Like, all right, yeah, we really want Rashawn Holmes. We got to clear the money right
sure,
now.
Sure. But $10 to $12 million, or you could, because I'm assuming if you got a different point guard for the minimum, like they could have done a lot with that, no matter what. But we can move on to the Boston Celtics. They had a comparatively quiet offseason compared to the Atlanta Hawks, which we just talked about. Their most important things were retaining Marcus Smart and Aaron Baines. Baines got a 2-year deal at the maximum they were allowed to do using his non-bird rights, and the second year of that is a player option, which is something we will talk about. They also brought back Jabari Bird, moving him from a two-way to a full-on NBA contract. They drafted Robert Williams. They signed Brad Wanamaker, and then Wanamaker basically replaced Shane Larkin. Williams, you could say, replaces Greg Monroe, and then Jabari Bird replaces Abdel Nader.
Yeah, Nader, they dumped. They were able to just save $450,000 by moving him to OKC, which was a nice, but not significant, but nice bit of maneuvering. Williams at number 27, you know, certainly has had his personality issues, wasn't really able to play much in summer league due to a knee issue as well. Certainly has a ton of talent, although not the type of talent in terms of a rim running big that they really have used a ton of in Boston. But we'll see what ends up happening with him. He's not going to play this year regardless, probably, you know, unless they really run into some trouble. Not a ton to say here. I mean, Wanamaker has a little bit more size and strength than Larkin, so might be able to play a little bit more in the playoffs if they're in a pinch. But certainly if Kyrie is healthy, they've got Smart, they've got Rozier. That is not the anticipation. We'll see, you know, he's probably not quite as good as Larkin, not quite as quick offensively. But and then Smart, he was 12 for 50 ultimately. I'm sorry, 4 for 50.
Yeah, I believe I think 4 for 52 is how it's been described, but there could be some guarantee stuff in that.
Yeah, so what did you make of that deal?
I think that was on the high side of what I would consider reasonable, but still within that reasonable band. Sort of the same thing as Baines. Like, I think it's about as player friendly as you could do, where I wouldn't say it was bad for the Celtics. And also the opportunity cost for them on those two guys, you know, this isn't good. The non-team friendly part of that isn't really going to cost them that much. As long, you know, there is this question about whether they'll get under the tax for this year, and then maybe in a year or two, you know, the Marcus Smart contract, if it doesn't look good, then that could hamstring stuff as all their other guys get a lot more expensive. But, you know, I think those are they're fine. You know, that's that. And for both of them, I mean, certainly there were other options, but I can understand what Ainge was getting at with saying there are other options, but this guy is better for us than the other ones. And when you are a team in the title mix, fit, and, you know, a slight downgrade really matters. We talked about that a lot in Houston's offseason. And so I like Aaron Baines better than anybody I can think of who was in that price range. So getting him back is a good thing. Now, I don't think they needed to give him a fully guaranteed second year. Maybe they could have done something Teodosic-esque, but, you know, that's not a huge thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't care for that player option for Baines either at age 31, considering what the center market was like. I mean, maybe they just had to do that this year. But and these are one of the two teams I would give an incomplete to, the Wizards being the other, of they didn't get out of the tax this summer. And so we'll see what the price for doing that ends up being, or in the Wizards case, not necessarily get out of the tax, but reduce their tax bill. The Celtics, this is one of the few times where I'd say, even if your owner is willing to pay the tax, it makes sense to get out of it just because they're so close. And they probably, you know, this is another one of those teams where, hey, they're going to be good enough. There are very few teams where I'm like, oh man, dope. You can't start the clock on the repeater tax. Like the Denver has been going crazy about that. It's like, you know, you haven't paid the tax in like 15 years and you're really far away from having a team that's that expensive and contending for, you know, 4 out of 5 years where you're going to be in the tax. But Boston is one of the few teams you'd say realistically has that. So I would support trying to get out of it if they can, but we'll see what the price for that ends up being and whether they in fact could do so. That could affect this grade in the future.
It could. And Boston
I will say this, that there's no real obvious candidate. I mean, that Marcus Morris would probably be the guy, but
he actually helps
really
the team.
Need him right
yeah
now.
I mean, yeah, the most logical would be if a team really like was interested in just taking on Yabusele. That wouldn't get them all the way there, but it would get them really close. And
I don't think anyone will be interested in that.
I don't think so either, but I've been wrong before. So that would, but if a team isn't willing to do it, then he becomes a bad fit because he doesn't get you all the way there. And if his value is below that. So yeah, that's, I gave them a C minus. I agree with your incomplete logic. That's fine. I just wanted to give them a grade for now. And because I'm not totally sure they're going to do it, this is not like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like I gave an incomplete, a partial incomplete to the Sacramento Kings because it's like they kind of have to do something here. I think they should, but it's not, I don't see it in kind of the same part of it. So yeah, I agree with your logic. I expected, the other way that this grade could look better is if Robert Williams, I really liked him in the draft. Obviously we didn't get to dig into the off the court stuff or the kind of character type stuff, but on the court, I really liked him. And if he plays somewhere other than Maine and they show that they can use him, I could see Williams being a part of boosting this grade up, but I don't expect that to happen just because of how good the Celtics expect to be and how hot, he'll have to earn that opportunity, and he could, but I'm not betting on it right now.
I ended up with a C plus. One additional thing about Smart as opposed to getting him with the qualifying offer is he provides salary fodder for a trade. Although if that turns into bad salary, that's not so good. So yeah, C plus. I mean, I thought, they didn't screw up. They brought back everyone who's important. And, I think Williams is a lot more potential than a lot of guys who were picked at 27, despite some of the issues. So that's why I went with a C plus, but I would give much higher than a C plus to Burrow, which brings style and comfort to a whole new level and ships couches to your door fast and free. They're ergonomically designed, extremely comfortable. We really like ours. It's in our sunroom right now. The cats absolutely love it, by the way, enjoy taking their afternoon nap in the sunbeam. What I really liked about it too was the ability to customize it. You can select the color, the size, armrest height, leg color. It's really just a beautiful mid-century type design. But you can customize it for you. It even comes with a built-in USB charger. So when you're really settled in there on the couch, binge watching, and your phone starts to die, just now you can stay there even longer. Another nice little feature is you get 30 days of cozy on your comfortable Burrow risk-free. Or you could try one out at one of their partner showrooms, which are dotted around the country. So if you, like many of our listeners, I've found that it's time to get rid of your college couch. You're a professional now. You need something that actually looks good, but it's still a great value. Go to burrow.com, burrow.com/capspace. And you get $75 off your purchase. Once again, that's burrow.com/capspace. Easy to remember because we talk about capspace all the time on the program. Get that $75 off your purchase. Burrow makes a luxury couch for real life. And make sure you use that /capspace URL to let them know you came from us. So the Brooklyn Nets, you mentioned that the Hawks were active. The Nets were ridiculously active. They started off the summer by trading Timofey Mozgov to Mitch Kupchak and the Charlotte Hornets, who don't really have much of a sense of our amusement because Mitch Kupchak, who signed him to that contract initially, then traded him on to Orlando. They also traded $5 million in cash, a second rounder, and a second round pick swap to the Hornets in that deal to get back Howard. Howard was making almost $24 million this year. Mozgov was at 16 this year, 17 next year. But then Howard bought out for $5 million less than what he was making. So that was really an awesome deal to just for $5 million in cash, a second and a second round pick swap. I'm sorry, no, it wasn't a pick swap. It was the pick that became Hamidou Diallo this year and their own 2021 first round pick. So it was two second rounders. But to do two second rounders and $5 million, and they basically dumped $14 million in dead salary overall and cleared $16.7 million off their books for next year. That is just an absolute steal to dump that amount of money, especially once you consider they're able to get the Howard buyout, and then that facilitated a bunch of their other moves.
Yeah, the Nets squeezed everything out of their cap space and then did moves after they squeezed their space. So they, to use a lot of that, they created more space by moving Jeremy Lin to the Hawks, something we talked about before. And while we criticized that for the Hawks, it's amazing for the Nets because they were able to, get all of that money, which they immediately used to get a first round pick protected from Denver in exchange for Kenneth Faried and Darrell Arthur. They later moved Darrell Arthur for Jared Dudley and got a protected second out of that deal once they had their space. But then with the cap space, they signed Ed Davis. Technically, I guess he was with the room exception, but they signed Ed Davis. They signed Shabazz Napier. They signed Travion Graham. And what's significant about the Napier and Graham signings, and so I'm going to say this right now, I'm giving them a straight A, which I don't usually for a non-transformative offseason, but this is in the line, I've said this in other years, for a team that did the absolute best they could with what they had. And so Napier and Graham, both of those guys, they gave a non-guaranteed, I believe it is structured as a non-guaranteed, not a team option in both those, second year at basically the minimum. Napier got a little bit more than the minimum for the first year, but then the minimum for the second year. That is phenomenal value and team control from them. Ed Davis at the room MLE, totally fine. That's a good contract. Musa, we're going to have to see whether he is a good value. They also get some benefit from those guys, from him and Kuruks not really playing in Summer League. So we don't know if they were necessarily good or bad. So I just kind of leave that as a neutral for the time being. And, you know, Jared Dudley's going to help them. They got a second round pick out of that deal. The one weird criticism I have for the Nets is that this would have been a good year for them to bottom out. And they got all these players that are going to help them. So there is that weird thing, but they got such good value. I feel like even if they could just trade some of these guys if they want. And so like there is a way that this could backfire a little bit, but Sean Marks creating the value in terms of cap space for next year, a first round pick, and then netting a loss of one second round pick because they picked up one in one deal, lost two in another. Like, that's really good. Like that's a pretty incredible to pull all that together when they didn't have a lot of flexibility in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, they started the offseason with basically what, $10 million in cap space or so?
Yeah, and the other thing they did well was Joe Harris. So Joe Harris, they got him with early bird rights, and they also made his contract descend. Another good use of it's a really basic cap thing, but some teams have gotten this wrong before. So he's just less money next year than he is this year, when that made no difference for them. But having him wait, you know, they got to use all of that cap space and then use that to go over. They're still well clear of the luxury tax.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, you know, maybe that's a little high for him, but they did have it descend as well as they should have, which is good. And, you know, Joe Harris could be a value contract 1 year, $7 million after this season. And it basically was free money to them with his low cap.
Well, it was free money for this year, not free money next year. But
yes,
but,
exactly.
But also, yeah, I mean, who knows what they're doing with Allen Crabb long term. I mean, maybe if they need to squeeze out space next year, maybe they stretch or trade Allen Crabb. If Joe Harris can step into a similar role, by all means. I mean, he's the price for, even if it's as a straight two, but I think he can dance between a couple of different positions. Those guys, if they can be capable shooters and, you know, ideally better than Sivs defensively, you know, those guys are valuable, except for Travion Graham, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I gave them an A as well. I mean, to really, it was incredible what they did with $10 million in space. I mean, they got probably the best pick that changed hands in the bad salary dump derby by far, that Denver pick, the protection on that that they did well to negotiate. I love all of these transactions, basically. I mean, there isn't one transaction in here that I didn't think was a good one. The only problem, as you mentioned, is this is the first year they have their pick. And Sean Marks has publicly said, although, you know, what you say publicly as a GM, you're not held to that, but has said that, you know, they're not going to tank. I mean, and they're trying to win as many games as they can. And I get that. You know, I mean, they've been bad for so long. They want to feel like they're making some progress. But there's still, despite all of these moves being great in the aggregate, or I'm sorry, great individually, in the aggregate, you wonder what the end game is here, because there's still a lack of star talent. We don't think D'Angelo Russell is going to get there. Maybe some small chance that he does still. And so if they're not going to be bad this year, you know, if they're going to win, I mean, I'm trying to think of what it'd be, but, you know, you could see this team getting a 30-35 win, sure, something like that. Now, maybe perhaps they are emboldened a little bit by the lottery changes that they could still have a decent chance at getting up into the top four.
Yeah, or theorizing that having a better, being as bad as they were going to be is hard for free agency, which is a way that they think they can make their team better. There is some logic to that. And then one other thing I wanted to make sure we mention here that will affect their grade, if it happens, but we just don't know yet, is whether they extend D'Angelo Russell or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, because that will be in the offseason grade should it occur.
I would be shocked if they do.
I'd say
given
that,
their 2019 cap space. I mean, you don't do that Mozgov dump, although, I mean, that was a good deal anyway, but like that seemed like the prelude to, and
right,
especially,
because, the logic being that they could have dumped that salary if needed later on, as opposed to doing it ahead of time. Incidentally, kind of like what the Lakers did with Mozgov, where they it kind of was a clear signal that they were going after 2018.
Let's move on to the Hornets, and I gave them a D. I think they totally blew it by not just buying out Howard themselves. Perhaps Howard, for some reason, just didn't like them and wouldn't have offered them as much. Maybe they didn't realize, because Howard basically bought out for just about the exact amount that he ended up signing for in Washington, which was also curious as well. But maybe Howard just didn't know that he had that much money available on the free agent market, and so wouldn't have bought out for that price if he'd just stuck around that long. But that seems unlikely to me. It seems like that was all kind of prearranged with the Nets, and so why couldn't Charlotte have just done that? Maybe there's some explanation, but I just don't know what that is at this point. And so if that were the case, I mean, to get Howard for $2.8 million more than Mozgov, and then not have to take on another whole year of Mozgov 16.7. And then you throw in the fact they traded Mozgov for Biombo. So even this year's savings, you know, gave him some breathing room below the tax, to be sure. But, you know, really, compared to Howard's buyout, was less than $2 million. And then, yeah, okay, they got a couple of seconds. That's good. They got $5 million. I really don't care about that at all, but it probably means something to them. They've already taken in their maximum amount in cash. So I'm just not really that happy with this offseason. And then, you know, Biombo is a little bit better than Mozgov. I mean, I guess, you know, that's the ultimate deck chairs on the Titanic trade, but I'd probably rather have Biombo than Mozgov if I had to decide. And then Tony Parker for $5 million this year, $5.3 million next year, though at least that's non-guaranteed, thank God. But I don't know if they solved their problems. You know, that seems like mostly a sop to Nicola Batum and another, you know, winning the press conference veteran leadership type of thing. There's no indication that, you know, if Tony Parker were coming off the injury that he had at 36 and wasn't Tony Parker with that history, there's no way he gets this contract. So I don't think he's going to contribute to them that much. What did you make of the Miles Bridges pick compared to who else might have been available at that time? It was originally number 11, and then they moved down to number 12.
Yeah, they actually got 2 seconds out of the Clippers to move down one spot. The Clippers really wanted Shea, and I think the Miles Bridges pick is the most important thing Charlotte did in this offseason. I don't feel strongly about it right now yet, but I feel like I will 6 months from now. I just don't have it yet. Shea looked good to me. I also, you know, Michael Porter would have been a high upside guy. I actually talked about that specifically, that Charlotte should have traded up for Michael Porter. So Bridges...
Well, you're saying before the draft, you were saying that?
Yeah, and then they could have just gotten him straight up. Like, they didn't have to do that. So
yeah,
I would guess that I'm going to be more negative on it, but Bridges, you know, he's a little bit smaller, but stronger than I thought he would, you know, like he's physically strong. So maybe if he can defend threes a little bit, like there's certainly something like about.
I think he can defend.
Yeah.
Threes.
Like there's certainly something to like about Bridges. And so I'm not writing him. I'm like a little bit negative, but not much. And he can certainly outperform that. And a couple other big picture things I want to say with Charlotte. This is the second straight year where a team was so desperate to dump Dwight Howard that they missed the most obvious option. Like, Atlanta should have just stretched him and didn't do it. Charlotte benefited from that, and then they did that, which was insane. But then the other part of this, you talked about the Tony Parker element here. I want to go back to the Nets for a second. The Nets signed Napier for a much better contract than Tony Parker. I think Napier will be better this year than Tony Parker, and he still fits the whole college player, all that kind of Michael Jordan stuff. And then Travion Graham. This might not be the
last...
This might be the last time that he gets mentioned here. Travion Graham would have helped them. And you know, we have all these other forwards and all that. You have a capable player. There is no opportunity cost. He signed basically a 2-1 at the minimum with a team that doesn't really have much more playing time to offer. You have bird rights. I mean, that's just completely insane. So I ended up...
Yeah, he was restricted. They could have just had a qualifying
Yeah.
offer for him for 1.7 million.
It's completely insane. So,
He was in their rotation last year. Even if he doesn't develop, you know, at least getting a guy who played decent enough minutes for you last year at 1.7 million is fine.
I gave them a D as well. I think there's a significant chance that I have this lower after this year, basically, if Bridges is worse than the guys drafted around him, which is entirely possible. And they theoretically had the choice, including of Shea, because they could have taken him easily and not made the trade. Like that was an option available to them. And we'll see if that factors in. Tony Parker, you know, it would be shocking to me if he substantially outperformed what we expect from him. Devontae Graham, you know, he could end up doing well, but he's not really going to have much of a chance this coming year. I feel like Kabulka is going to get stashed. I haven't heard anything about
Yeah.
him. So yeah, I mean, this is a
Yeah, I did like Devontae Graham
yes.
at 34,
Yeah.
although they did trade up to get him. But yeah, I think that could end up being a pretty good pick. Who knows? Maybe he'll be better than Tony Parker this year.
Yeah. And if he's better than Tony Parker, we'll see. And they also have a
The
new.
list of point guards that signed this summer that are going to be better than Tony Parker that we're just going to be talking about all year.
Yeah, and the other thing we should mention for them, they don't get the benefit, but they might eventually, is James Borrego. You know, they hired a head coach that has no head coaching experience, so I didn't add that in either way because I don't really know much about Borrego. But if he does a good job, then that will move up their grade. If he doesn't or doesn't move the needle, then it'll affect it that way as well.
Yeah, he didn't really make much of an impression on me either way when he was in Orlando in that interim stint, in contrast to maybe like a JB Bickerstaff and his interim stint. Let's move to the Bulls now. I actually liked just about everything they did other than matching on Zach LaVine. And I ended up giving them a B. I suspect you will be lower.
I gave them a C plus. I think the most
Huh.
important thing they did was drafting Wendell Carter, and they nailed that. It looks like right now. I mean, Carter was great in summer league. He was also behind a lot of the guys that would have been considered. So, you know, so he was drafted later than Mo Bamba and anything. So there isn't even like a risk of, oh, you passed on player X to take Wendell Carter. Sure, Michael Porter, if he ends up being really good, that's an option there. I'm in some ways more pissed off about the Zach LaVine stuff because it was a match rather than a contract, because they had a get out jail free card. They could have just said, hey, you paid him a lot of money. Congratulations. You can take him. And I also think there's a chance that the Jerian Grant thing works ends up burning them, because they didn't really gain anything from that trade. They got a pick, and now that puts a lot on the shoulders of Cameron Payne, who I do not think is good. There's a chance that he is, but like I would have rather had two lottery tickets there rather than one. And the other thing they got wrong was David Nwaba. They could have just kept David Nwaba. I think he's a good basketball player. If they're trying to win this year, they could have done that. And so those aren't big things, but they are, you know, they are elements. And so then, but let's go through the rest of their offseason. They drafted Chandler Hutchison. It sounds like they kind of got him to commit early and not take all these other opportunities for workouts and all that kind of stuff. They also signed, of course, Jabari Parker on basically that 2-year contract where the second year is non-guaranteed.
No, team option.
Team option. Sorry, you're right. Team option. That's what I get for not having my sheet up. And that, you know, the opportunity cost of that is basically what else they could have done with that money. And
Yeah, and by the way, on Parker, part of the Grant trade was to open up more money to sign him, although,
I'm not
you
sure there
could
was
make the
anybody
argument that,
offering 17.5, putting their feet to the fire.
you can make that argument, certainly.
And so, and what was he going to do? Say, I'm going to sign the qualifying offer with the Bucks and make a whole lot less money? I mean, it's possible there.
Yeah, although psychologically, like
Sure.
getting to 20, actually, I think probably matters a lot.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So, yeah, I mean, so I gave.
Damn those Middle Eastern mathematicians who decided that we're gonna start numbering with a new digit every 10 numbers.
Yeah, it's not anchoring. It's something. There's another term for that, but I don't know what it is. But yeah, so for me, it's a weird offseason because, like, I mean, I think we have to emphasize that the Wendell Carter thing is the most important. And, you know, if he ends up being a long-term starter, especially if it's an above average or even elite starter, then that carries this for a half decade or more. And I don't like the LaVine contract. It is going to, you know, if it becomes as negative as I think it's going to be really hurt them. But, you know, you could argue that Wendell Carter is going to do that. If Chandler Hutchison does well, I basically put a TBD there because he was okay in summer league, but I didn't really get much of a feel. And then,
yeah, neutral on him.
Yeah. And then with Parker, you know, it's good that they have that control with the team option and that they can, you know, if it works out. And also I think that gives them leverage in terms of negotiations, that they can kind of have this preliminary period and go, hey, we can decline the option. Maybe they could do a longer term contract that is at a different number or something like that. And then if he has a good season, or, you know, they could just get out of it free if they want to do that. So yeah, C plus I think is fair, but if you want to go a little higher, probably because of Wendell Carter, I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, I think the B to me was mostly about liking Parker and just getting someone with a lot of upside on the team, getting him on the 2-1 as well. It was solid. You know, LaVine at least still has some star potential, but it's a lot of bust potential on that contract, 4 years, $78 million.
That's interesting that you say LaVine still has star potential. I do not think he has star potential. Maybe he has.
I'm not saying it's a high probability, if he just like has 25%, you don't think it's impossible that he could have like 25% usage and like 60% true shooting?
I don't think there's a chance that he like makes an all-star team or something, like if we're defining it by fame, but I don't think it'd be, especially considering how awful he is defensively. I don't think there's a chance he's like one of the, for me, there's not a chance below like the nominal percent for almost anybody that he's a top 5 to 5 point guard in the league. No, I don't see that.
But shooting guard, you mean? Well, you don't have to be a top 5 shooting guard to be worth $20 million. I mean,
well, no, you said star. You brought in star potential here, and to me, star potential is something different than being worth the money he offered.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Yeah, I think that the fact that he can take and make some very difficult threes is a skill that could potentially be leveraged if the ball goes in enough for him. But you know, I wasn't in favor of matching either, but I do think that possibility still exists. Now, if their goal this year was to like, oh, we're gonna like really look like a team on the rise and win a bunch of games and be in playoff contention, and then, you know, free agents are gonna want to come here, you know, I don't know that they accomplished that. I think a lot of people in Chicago are way too optimistic about this team. Vegas is perhaps less so as of right now. And also, like, giving any guaranteed money to Ryan Arcidiacono just makes no sense at all to me. Carter at number 7, I mean, basically it was fait accompli he was going to get picked there. You know, that was really considered by most people, I think, the end of a tier if they weren't going to consider Michael Porter due to the injuries. We'll see. Maybe they still should have done that. But as you mentioned, Carter looked pretty good. So yeah, it went with the B. Still not as bad as Brooklyn, because I think they have some guys who have some upside on this team, but you still do wonder about, you know, who is the superstar that gets this team, you know, back into being a really good team. Is that guy on the roster yet? Maybe not. But I think given the resources they had available, they did close to the best they could. And I probably would have even given them an A had it not been for the LaVine match. Let's move to the Cavaliers. What did you give them?
I gave them a D-. They added Colin Sexton. That was the big thing in terms of the draft, because they had the 8th overall pick and they took him over Knox, Bridges, Shea, a bunch of other guys, Michael Porter. And then they lost LeBron James. I don't criticize them for that. I'm sure they offered whatever they could, and he just said no. Just like I didn't give the Lakers a ton of credit, I'm not killing the Cavs for that at all. That's not really a part of the grade. But the other big stuff they did, they gave Kevin Love that extension. They signed David Nwaba. It looks like they're going to trade for Decker, which that doesn't really affect it at all. We don't know. I assume they're going to end up with Rodney Hood. We don't know what the terms that are going to be, whether that's him taking his qualifying offer or something beyond that. So I didn't really factor that in much. It's just like it's going to happen at some point. So for me, there are a couple things to say about the Cavs. So one is entirely possible that there wasn't as much of an opportunity cost to hold on to their veterans, because other than maybe Kyle Korver, they all failed in an A test. You know, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith, those guys are expensive. You know, Kevin Love is complicated. I think a team would have taken him on his existing contract. I don't, you know, maybe not into space, but you know, some sort of thing that works. But being in no man's land like they are right now does them very few favors. You know, they, especially because they have that top 10 protected pick, I think they can tank out of that if they try to make the playoffs and aren't in it. But I just feel like they stuck themselves for no particularly good reason, and I do not like the Kevin Love extension. So that is actually, that and the Sexton pick are the most important parts of my grade.
Yeah, Sexton I'm not as low on it as you. I think he had some flashes in summer leagues. I mean, that's kind of like a C pick to me. You know, I think it's just a guy I'm not super high on, but it's not a ridiculous pick for there. And there's some guys below him maybe who could look better, but I'm not incredibly high on any of them either. I mean, it would have been nice to see. This is the range where you're like, hey, Michael Porter, you probably could have considered that. But no, they got to make the playoffs this year. They got to prove that, hey, LeBron James, we don't need you. We could still get the eighth seed and be first-round cannon fodder without you. So I'm not sure why that's considered so awesome. Maybe it's this arena renovation, but this Love extension definitely seems like winning the press conference. At least they signed him to it to the point where he'd be tradable at the deadline. Now the question of whether he will be tradable at the deadline is a whole nother thing. I think with his injury history, I think that is going to look like a really, really bad contract. There's some possibility maybe he gets back to Minnesota, Kevin Love, but I'm not sure that is necessarily going to be the case here.
And that ties in with the big reasons I really didn't like their offseason is it kind of ties in with that they had the opportunity to see how this season played out before paying him, and he didn't have the leverage to say, if you don't, certainly he could have left, but I mean, yeah. The chance
they could have offered him this extension, before the trade deadline,
sure.
too,
if it works out, and they took on so much risk that Kevin Love isn't that guy anymore. They paid him, even if he's Minnesota Kevin Love at or close to it at 30, that's very different than at 26 in terms of getting a future contract. And if that ends up being maybe not a NOAA trade clause, but ends up being just a hard contract to move, that makes it a lot harder for Cleveland to pivot. If this team isn't good enough, other than Sexton, it's going to take them some time to get better. And so having more money on your books than you need to have, if it's a negative value contract, is more significant.
Yeah, I think so. Now, who knows? Maybe they looked into trading him. But I mean, I think they should have tried to trade him in the summer. It's easier to trade guys in the summer. Teams have cap space. You have a lot more options available. And so I ended up giving them a D. I think I'd been higher than you on every single team so far. That's crazy. I'm not sure which of us is usually more negative, but I gave them a D. I mean, I think they absolutely should have just tried to rebuild. The Sexton pick was fine, but I would have supported Porter and just tanking this year. I mean, they have the top 10 protected pick. I mean, losing that would be kind of a disaster. And now they're going to have to tank their butts off if they don't make the playoffs, which I don't anticipate.
Well, and not only that but they're tanking their butts off to get a worse pick than if they had just understood where they were in the first place. The difference between the sixth pick and the 10th pick is significant here.
Channing Frye is a good bet, but really makes absolutely no sense here because they just have so many centers already. They have absolutely no other power forwards on the roster outside of Kevin Love. They did at least get Sam Decker in that trade, which we should talk about. I know you mentioned it briefly a little bit, basically just taking him into a trade exception they had from the Kyrie Irving deal, which was set to expire soon. I think that the Clippers had to get rid of him because of their roster crunch, and I think that's a totally worthy gamble. Decker really disappointed last year, but had some moments of effective play his second year in Houston, and they don't have much at the three. Similarly, signing David Nwaba at least gives them something there. So maybe they at least have the ability now, if they want to play Love at center, they could play Decker at the four, Oshman at the three or something, and try to do those lineups maybe to outscore teams a little bit. Ultimately, I think that this is just going to be one of those situations where you're like, oh, we can't take a step back. Well, okay, so you're going to win 30 games for 2 years and then accept reality and start rebuilding after you already just wasted 2 years.
Yeah, and what team should have known what the benefit of eating it quickly after losing LeBron James is? It's Cleveland. That's the team that understands this. I mean, they ended up getting all those picks that ended up converting into one Kyrie Irving and then the other guys that they used to sweeten the pot when they got LeBron James.
Right. They took on Baron Davis. They opened up flexibility and we'll see. Maybe a fire sale will come at the deadline and then they can tank the second half of the season if they're just not into it. And maybe they just felt like, all right, J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, George Hill, like we just can't move these guys. But Love certainly would have been the guy to me that I think they should have traded post this, especially with this injury list. Let's move on to Detroit now. Quiet off season for them, so we probably won't spend quite as much time on them. I think actually the biggest thing that happened to them was losing Anthony Tolliver and James Ennis, whom they actually did have early early bird rights on. They instead added GR3 in his place with part of their mid-level, but not all of it, because they want to avoid the tax this year. GR3 is on a 2-1 non-guaranteed second year for $4.5 million. You could certainly make the argument that you would have rather had James Ennis for that contract. Maybe Ennis just wanted to leave, but he hasn't made much money in his career. You would think they could have outbid what the Rockets ended up with there, and they had the early bird rights on him, so they could have done that and still kept the mid-level open, but of course they have to avoid the tax. And then they also waived Eric Moreland and signed Zaza Pachulia. I don't think Pachulia is really going to help them too much anymore. Bruce Brown, Khyree Thomas, don't have a great feel for them yet. That's actually Liam's team, for who's going to do that in a couple of episodes here. Jose Calderon is total blah for the minimum. I mean, that's another one of those ones where wouldn't you have rather gotten someone who at least has some upside and isn't just, you know, total caretaker? But they already have 2 point guards in Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith anyway, so it's probably not going to matter. Maybe they needed someone who's okay without playing. So I ended up giving them a D just because they lost Tolliver. They lost GR3. Tolliver, you know, Minnesota offered him just a little bit more than probably they would have been comfortable with under the tax. But he was a big contributor for them last year. They lost Ennis, and I think they got a little worse for this year. And yeah, they had limited resources, but getting a little worse for this year when you're trying to compete this year gets you a D.
I gave them a C minus, so the first time I have an East team over you.
Yeah.
And for me, so if you think about that, they had, let's call it like $4 or $5 million to spend outside of minimums. GR3 is a fine play, and I like that they were one of the few teams that gave a player, it looks like to me, this is my read on the contract, more money in 18-19 to get a team friendly, it's not an option, it's a non guarantee, I believe, for that second year, and that's a good thing. I think more teams should have done that. Pay a little bit more money, and they have a higher opportunity cost than most because they only had so much under the cap to really do. And then we should also mention that they gave up 2 seconds for Khyree Thomas. That was not a pick they had in the first place, so that could end up biting them as well. And you know, Khyree,
or he could be good. We just have to see.
Like, again, now I didn't factor that in too much with my grade. And I feel like Pachulia for Moreland and Calderon for Bikes, that those are both upgrades, but they theoretically could have gotten somebody else for the minimum. And, you know, I think both those guys are fine. Calderon, I think the idea behind that is more just to have somebody stable if either Ish Smith or Reggie Jackson gets hurt. We can certainly see that. We've seen it before. And then with Pachulia, you know, gap fill, good veteran, that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I'm fine with this offseason. And you talked about Tolliver and Ennis. Like, I think Ennis just wasn't, I mean, they barely used him last year. Like, it feels like he wouldn't have wanted to go back there. And then Tolliver, maybe with the coaching change, with everything else, that wouldn't have been there. And I didn't factor in the Casey part of it too much. He is definitely, to me, a good coach.
Yeah, we should have talked about
that.
He's
definitely a good coach. I mean, but I don't know, like, how, I wonder how he's going to be with the specific challenges of this team. Like, that might end up being it's definitely the biggest addition of their offseason, but I don't know how much of a positive it is because he can't fix what's, I'm not sure he can fix what's broken, but I would love to be wrong on that.
I mean, all available evidence indicates that Casey has done a very good job as a regular season coach with the Raptors, and certainly the Pistons should be more concerned with the regular season than the postseason, but we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of thought that the innovations that they did have in Toronto didn't necessarily come from Casey initially. This also seems to be a very traditional organization at this point in time. And so I think, you know, Casey, he brings a lot of good old school things, like just his people skills, being able to manage the roster, build a good bench. But some of the more new school stuff that he kind of was pushed to do in Toronto, I think he kind of needs someone who provides that element. And I'm not sure that in this organization that will necessarily exist with Ed Stefanski running things necessarily. But yeah, I mean, it's just not a very sexy offseason. Went with the D. The Pacers had a lot of resources. We'll talk about them in a moment here. But first, I love how we always do the SeatGeek reads after, like, or before, which I wouldn't say with the Pacers, actually. I'm very interested to see them this year. But the Pistons are kind of one of the less interesting to watch teams. But if you want to see the Detroit Pistons, and I bet you could actually get some amazing deals at that really nice arena. They've got great food options there, too, apparently. Little Caesars Arena. Despite the name of the arena, it has good food options. SeatGeek is a great way to get deals. Whether you want to go to a summer concert, football season, a musical, comedy. SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites and they grade every ticket based on value. So that's going to save you time and save you money. You can easily identify the best seats for your budget. You see that big green dot, the bigger and darker green, the better it is. I've gotten some great values on SeatGeek before, and they guarantee every purchase. You can shop for tickets with confidence. And if you, for some reason, haven't tried SeatGeek yet, which would be shocking since they were the first ever advertiser on Dunked On over 3 years ago. But if you are new to SeatGeek, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase using that familiar Capspace code. It still does make me happy when it's the code instead of the URL. It's always like slightly disappointing when it's the URL. The Capspace code just rolls off the tongue. Use that, get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase, and let them know that you came from us with that awesome code. I'll let you go first here on the Pacers, Danny.
So I think it's underappreciated how big a bet the Pacers made on having space in 2019, because they could have made a pretty significant dent here as one of the few teams that had cap space and could have offered, you know, as many years as they were comfortable with. And that very well could end up working out for them, but it also might not, because there are going to be a lot of glamour franchises that have a bunch of money. There aren't that many players that are going to be those huge difference makers. And there were a lot of good, if not great, players on the market. And so I think that they got better. You know, I would say that Tyreek, McDermott, O'Quinn replacing GR3, Lance Stephenson, Al Jefferson, like, I would say that makes them better. And they, you know, they didn't sacrifice long-term flexibility very much. I mean, they did give McDermott 3 years, but outside of that, so I ended up giving them a C+, but there are two big issues. One is that bet on 2019. The other one is they still don't have, like, they didn't get a forward who can defend on this team. And even though LeBron James is not in the Eastern Conference anymore, that is still a big need. And they could have gone for a more flashy guy with that. They could have gone for a more, you know, like a lottery ticket flyer type of guy. But to go through this entire offseason and not really get anybody for that niche is very weird and frustrating.
Yeah, and you could say Ben Simmons, Giannis, Thaddeus Young can guard him. I don't know if he can guard Kawhi Leonard. Maybe he can. Kawhi could come back kind of a little slower, a little more of a power player. Maybe that's the thinking, though, is just in the East in a playoff series. And when they did their offseason, they didn't know that Kawhi would be in the East either. But certainly on a night-to-night basis, it'd be nice to have someone who can guard the best threes. I think you talk about this, and I think this is an important point to make, because I gave them a C-, and people might say, like, hey, they improved, right? Like, they got Tyreek, they got McDermott, they got O'Quinn. Those are upgrades. And especially if Tyreek plays anywhere close to the way he did last year, you know, he could really help them. Aaron Holiday as well in the early 20s. That was a one where, you know, I think he's got a chance to be a solid backup point guard someday, drafting at that level, maybe even someone who has starter upside. He's got a lot of skills, but, you know, obviously statistically in summer league was not incredibly impressive. So, all right, they got better. How can you give them a C-? Well, they could have had $40 million in cap space even after Young opted in, but they opted to guarantee Bogdanovich. They opted to guarantee Collison. Collison, I understand a little bit more because the point guard market was very limited. I might have just given the keys to Victor Oladipo at point guard and tried to get something at shooting guard instead, because I thought that there was just a lot more of that available on the market this year. But they could add $40 million in space, and I definitely don't agree with them guaranteeing Bogdanovich. Like, you're telling me that Bogdanovich, you know, I mean, worst case scenario, you strike out and then you just re-sign him for $10 million again, right? Like, I mean, is he really going to get better than that on this market? Like, no way. So, and I agree with you. I think they should have, number one, taken a swing at someone who can be a forward, but also just to get someone who can be a long-term piece of this team. I mean, they've got Victor Oladipo. You've got Miles Turner. So, you know, those guys are still going to be good for 3-4 years. So you've got all this cap space, and they didn't get anyone. You know, I won't put McDermott in this category, to be sure, and I thought they overpaid for him. But they didn't get anyone to be a part of it. And so, you know, I think even like taking a bet on Jabari Parker would have been interesting. Non-guaranteeing, you know, waiving Bogdanovich and going with like a max offer sheet for Aaron Gordon, even though Aaron Gordon may not live up to that. You know, maybe he could be a part of this team. Thaddeus Young is going to be gone next year. You mentioned there's so much more competition, but this was the year. This isn't considered a free agent destination for whatever reason, but they have all this space. And yeah, they have flexibility for next year. But I think especially in this market, market, they were one of the teams I most was thinking, hey, you know what? You didn't do enough here. And they're like, there was strength in the market at shooting guard. And they ended up getting Evans, but only for 1 year. You know, I'd be very interested to know what those negotiations were in terms of what it would have taken to get him on a contract longer than that. That's something that I would have hoped they could have considered. Maybe he just wasn't interested in that. But yeah, I think there are some directions they could have gone. And then also the other thing too is just, you know, getting some flyers, you know, of guys on the wing. And that would have been another good James Ennis thought, would have been another good Travion Graham thought. There's just to get someone with the potential of defending.
Hell, they could have given GR3 the contract he got with the Pistons because of the bird rights. They could, I don't think they weren't squeezed.
Yeah,
so
he had, I mean, they could have just given him like $6 million for 1 year with the second year non-guaranteed. He had a minimum cap hold.
Yeah.
Why not bring him back?
And
Tyrone Wallace or Patrick McCaw or, I mean, just someone who has some upside to defend, or, you know, maybe they could have looked at like an Avery Bradley or a KCP if they wanted to move Oladipo to point guard. You know, there are just so many options that they had here, and I just felt that they, yeah, Evans, you know, that seemed like a match. You know, he and Barton were the two guys, you know, you felt like one of those two guys was going to end up in Indiana, and ended up being Evans, and I think they did well there. But it just, you know, they're better for this year, but they're not any better for beyond this year, and I think that's more relevant with this team, unless, you know, Holiday really hits, and I gave him a little credit for that.
I'm moving them down to a C. I'm realizing now that my misgivings are stronger than I had given them. And then here's this other thing.
What did you give them initially?
A C plus. I'm moving a C plus to a C.
Okay.
And so Kylo Quinn, also a player that I like, yeah, and a player that I like the contract he got, but
yeah. So now you can play Sabonis at the four.
Like, Sabonis is now playing out of position again. That was money that could have been used for somebody at a different spot, and they could have gotten a minimum center to be a gap filler that without screwing up their second unit integrity and their chemistry and everything like that. And also, like, O'Quinn at the room mid-level, I don't think there's a ton of chance that he's going to outperform that contract by so much that they can, like, get an asset for him at the deadline or something like that. It's not really a value proposition. It's a good contract, but it's not going to really be in that frame of reference. So it's like, even the things other than Tyreek, and we'll see with Holiday. If Holiday's great, then certainly that can go through it. I right now I like it, but don't love it. But they didn't get a lot of future value with this, and they had all the reason in the world to. They had an amazing opportunity. This was not the summer of 2016 where everyone had money and was spending it like sailors on shore leave. Like, that's not what this was. They had a material advantage and largely didn't really use it.
Let's move to Miami now. They added absolutely nobody. As of now, we'll see. Maybe they lost Dwayne Wade. You know, Wade apparently has a $25 million offer sitting there in China for him. Looks like the Heat do have their mini mid-level available, but doesn't appear that they are going to be using it. They did bring Derek Jones into the fold on an NBA contract. They brought back Wayne Ellington for exactly what he made last year, $6.27 million. They did not use the taxpayer MLE, although they are in the tax right now. This is another one of these ones where maybe their grade changes a little bit if they get out of the tax, and how much it costs to do that, or, you know, if they're just willing to pay it, that's fine too. So I ended up giving them a C+, just because they're at least willing to pay the tax. Ellington could have seemed like a luxury, and we're just going to let him go because we don't want to pay the tax, and they did pay him. You know, I thought getting him back at that price, other teams should have been in on him and should have been willing to pay him more. Hey, Pacers probably could. That's another one. You know, I would have much rather had Ellington than Doug McDermott, and Ellington would have come cheaper. So, you know, I think they did well to get him at that price. We'll see what happens with Wade. I probably would actually lower them a little bit if they do bring back Wade, just because he's going to have to play, and I think they just have enough guys who do what he does, especially, you know, I don't think he should be closing games for them. So I'll stick with the C+ right now. If they bring back Wade, I would probably just make it a straight C. But, you know, really just a relatively uneventful. So I don't really have anything else to say there.
I gave them a B+/incomplete. The incomplete being, we'll see how they handle the tax. Like, that'll really swing it. And Miami does not have any clear cut way to get under. So if they do, it'll come at some real consequence, whatever that is. It could be getting, you know, getting worse. It could be you know, giving up an asset, whatever that is. But I think when Ellington's on a team friendly deal, I would have, you know, obviously anytime a guy signs a team friendly 1-year deal, you go, oh, it would have been great to have them on a 2-year contract, but he wouldn't have signed that because it wouldn't have made any sense other than maybe a player option, but that would have been less team friendly. And maybe
he would have signed it actually. That's one where he's 30, so
if you could pull that would have been a little bit better. I think Derek Jones giving him a guaranteed contract, that's fine. He looked good in the part of summer league before he hurt his ankle. And I mentioned this on Twitter, but it's just so striking. Not only did Miami not sign anybody else's free agents, none of their own free agents signed anywhere else either, because like Jordan Mickey and Wade and Udonis Haslam or anything. It's just a weird offseason because like you could say with other teams, oh, almost nothing happened. Almost nothing happened here. And so for me, that puts a lot of weight on Wayne Ellington, and I think Wayne Ellington's a good contract. So I gave them a B+/incomplete.
Yeah, it's almost like all of these teams spent a ton of money in 2016 and are totally taxed out and can't do anything.
Well, they spent a lot in 2017.
Yeah, that's true too. So let's what did you end up giving them?
B+/incomplete.
Okay, yeah, I went with the C+. Let's turn now to the Bucks. Dante DiVincenzo at number 17. Ersan Ilyasova, 3 years, $21 million last year, non-guaranteed. Brook Lopez for the biannual exception, $3.3 million for 1 year. And then they lost Jabari Parker and Shabazz Muhammad and Jason Terry. You know, don't care too much about the last two. Brandon Jennings, they just waived. I ended up going with a D for them.
I originally had them in the C range and then moved them down to D because of the opportunity cost here. I mean, this is another team where you have a very limited window to make the best possible team you can around Giannis in the near term and the long term. And yeah, Brook Lopez on his contract, total support. If DiVincenzo had played in summer league and done really well, then I could certainly see this. Like, he's the big thing that will change this number or this letter grade if it goes up. But Ersan Ilyasova, a good player, doesn't move the needle enough, but they paid him like he does. And so they had the mid-level, or they could have just freaking paid Jabari Parker. Like, they could have gone in other directions. And so instead, they get somebody who maybe lowers their floor, who plays the position I think Giannis should play eventually, who's just a good vet. And they had to do better than this. And they didn't. They had it's like sometimes I talked about it with the Pistons in my offseason preview for them for The Athletic, that sometimes having a narrower set of options allows teams to make good decisions because they can't go crazy. Well, the Bucks had narrow options and they just didn't maximize it.
The Bucks went into the offseason essentially right at the cap. And you mentioned they had full bird rights on Jabari Parker. They ended up signing Ersan Ilyasova, who I think will help them. But I think there were other much better value contracts, especially considering Ilyasova's age. He's not going to start for them. A lot of guys who signed for less money. And they could have offered plenty of playing time as well. DiVincenzo at 17, not a huge fan of just generally what he is. I've got to watch his summer league a little bit more closely. I'm viewing that as a slight negative, though, just because he doesn't seem like that much of a modern player. I thought there are other guys available there who could have fit into what I believe this team can be. But, you know, if he ends up being good, then you change that, obviously. I'm not downgrading them too much for that selection, but, you know, I mean, he's not that sexy to me. But getting back to the point that they're coming right at the cap, let's say if they were going to give Jabari Parker that same deal that he got from the Bulls, and maybe that was never going to happen, maybe Jabari was just so pissed off there he would have just never signed that, but you know, maybe they could have done that, and maybe they even could have guaranteed a little bit of his money for next year as well, and either done a non-guarantee or that team option. So then you've got $7 million below the apron. And now you say, oh, but wait a minute, the Buck, they only have $3 million below the tax now. Or I'm sorry, $2 million below the tax, whatever it is. Well, yeah. But number one, you could use the tax pyramid level and then have done a deal there that could have gotten some of you close to what Ilyasova was. And then just not even had to worry about the hard cap. Probably couldn't have found a way, unless they had salary dumped someone, to use anything more than the mini mid-level anyway. But, I think retaining Parker on that same contract and then using the mini mid-level to get the best player they could would have been a lot better because, you know, Parker, it's not like they upgraded so much. You know, they could have brought in Brook Lopez still for the same price that they did using the mini mid-level. So part of this problem is that ownership not wanting to pay the tax. And if you're not willing to pay the tax this year, when this is the first year, like these next 2 years, this is your advertisement. To be honest, you are moving into a new building this year. You have all these additional revenues. Your plan is to use cap space next summer. So you know you're not going to be in the tax next year if you're using cap space next summer. So why couldn't they just pay the tax for 1 year? Like, are they're just too cheap to do it. And this grade is not only for... And it would have made them better. And they could have held on to Jabari Parker, who still has some chance of breaking out. I said that I didn't expect him to return here because, you know, they needed someone who is just more stable. But I'm sorry, like Ersan Ilyasova, to me, it's not sexy enough that you just give up on Jabari Parker, especially if the price was what the price was with the Bulls. But really, you know, the tax was just too much of a impediment to them, you would guess, for them giving him a contract like the Bulls did, because it was $20 million for 1 year. It was just too much. So... And he wouldn't have wanted to go less than that for 1 year. And then the Bucks couldn't go more than 1 year, because if he doesn't work out, then your cap space aspirations for 2019 were ruined. But since he ended up on that contract with the Bulls, they could have tried to come up with something similar to that. But it was just a total non-starter for them because of the tax, it seems like. And again, maybe Jabari just wouldn't have ever considered that just because it was the Bucks and he's sick of the Bucks and you know, things had gone poorly there. But I mean, with the new coach and also the potential to just keep him on the qualifying offer, you know, they and offering $20 million for 1 year, I think they could have done that. They still could have gotten Lopez, who I do really like, actually. And then Ilyasova just isn't a great contract, so that's why I ended up with the D. I know that's a long diatribe there, but I mean, of it goes back to just not being willing to pay the tax.
So I realized why I had them in the C range, and I'm moving it back to from a D to a C minus because of Budenholzer. That's they got the best coach on the market. Yeah. That's why why I had them at a C minus was that, and so I remember that.
I forgot to write down all the coaches. That was my problem this time. All right, I'll give them a D plus. Fine. Bucks Twitter is gonna be mad at me for not being negative enough.
So let's move on to the Knicks.
Although, if getting Mike Budenholzer means you also have to pay 3 years
for Ersan Ilyasova, if they actually got Mike Budenholzer instead of Mike Budenholzer, then that grade, my grade, goes down.
Well, and this is a perfect organization for Mike Budenholzer to take hold because, you know, John Horace is an inexperienced GM. They've got all these factions in ownership. You know, you could see Mike ending up, you know, cozy with one of those factions or something. So yeah, it's never great, but still. The fact that they like when you clearly hurt your team by not paying the tax and it's only for 1 year, that you're always going to get way downgraded for me, especially because this is a team that's ready to win. Like they could be, this is a team that conceivably could be right there with some of the other powers in the East if they just got a little bit better and with the coaching upgrade.
One other quick thing to mention, Brandon Jennings had pushed back his guarantee date by a month, and
I
think that was a big mistake because
for Jennings, you
yes
mean?
Because they like he gave them more time to decide and weaken the market for him. Maybe he thinks he has something in some other jurisdiction available, but I mean, there are a lot of jobs that got full and he did not have a good chance of making this team on that contract.
All right, let's go to the Knicks here.
So the biggest thing the Knicks did was draft, and they drafted Kevin Knox at number 9, and then they drafted Mitchell Robinson at 36. And both of those guys, we'll talk about their summer league. We'll talk about them at some point. You know, both those guys look good. I think there's a little bit of fool's gold with Knox, as much as I liked him. I think there's a little bit there that might also be because I was lower on him in the process. But then the other stuff they did, they re-signed Luke Kornet at basically what they could do with non-bird rights because he had been they had that as a two-way guy. Then they signed Mario Hezonja to a straight one-year contract, $6.5 million. They gave Noah Vonleh a partial guarantee. And then they lost O'Quinn, Beasley, Troy Williams, and Jarrett Jack. And this is going to come down to Knox and Robinson. I mean, as I've been critical of the Hezonja signing because I just think they got no future value out of that money. And so even if Hezonja works out, it's very limiting for them because they don't have any sort of way to trade him. If they re-sign him, they probably have to renounce him, all that kind of stuff, because they want to use all this cap space next year. So I gave them a B. I'm sure some people are going to say, oh, Kevin Knox, he's going to be the steal of the draft. And he might end up being, you know, he might end up being really good. And Mitchell Robinson looks like like an NBA caliber athlete. We'll see how long it takes for him to figure out playing against NBA, like real NBA guys as opposed to summer league guys. But the other big thing I wanted to talk about with the Knicks, and I'm sure this is not this something that's going to piss off their fan base, I don't care. I don't think they've been nearly proactive enough for 2019, because I've been working on some stuff on this, that they're going to have to do something. If they want to get into this crazy, like, two max space, they're going to have to do something beyond just like cutting guys with the combination of Lee, Noah, and Tim Hardaway Jr. And it's very possible that those deals can come to fruition, that you can make magic happen in 2019. But the longer you kick the can down the road, it's going to be hard for them to make some of these big things work without giving up some serious assets.
Yeah. I mean, they might be able to like get off a Hardaway for the price of a future first. I don't share that concern as much. I mean, they'll be at about $35 million if they stretch Noah, which seems like that's going to happen as soon as the clock turns over to September 1st, and they can take his full salary for this year, but stretch him for next year. I'll be looking feverishly, checking my phone for that news during my wedding, which is also on September 1st. But then, so they're at $35 million there. And then, Lee, I think, could be movable at that point. There'd be a lot of teams with a lot of space next summer. I think it'd be easier to move salary next summer than it was this summer. There's always the deadline as well. If someone wants someone who can play, and then Hardaway, they actually signed because they like him. And so that it's not, I agree with you that he is not that good and is overpaid, but if you really get desperate, all right, we got two max guys in our pocket here, you can get off of Tim Hardaway Jr. with the first price. So I'm not as worried about that. I echo your sentiments on Knox. He certainly flashed, but overall statistically wasn't as good as it kind of looked at his best moments. Robinson, I was incredibly impressed by with his physical tools and the fact that he actually played hard. I mean, usually that's the problem. You have these guys who've taken a weird path and you've assumed there's some reason why it is that they couldn't have played, been okay in a team environment. But that didn't appear to be the case for Robinson. And, the fact that he was able to play at really a higher intensity level than a lot of the guys in summer league, given his background, was extremely impressive to me. I ended up with a B minus. I'll echo what you said on Hazonia and Vonleh as well. Like, it seems like, oh yeah, young flyer, second draft, but yeah, you have no upside there. B minus where I'll end up, but certainly if Knox develops, that could go a lot higher. If Robinson develops, it could go a lot higher. And then, but I still think this was in the range where, even knowing that Porter had to have a second surgery, I think, especially because the Knicks are going to suck this year anyway, like, why not just take a flyer on Porter?
I gave them a straight B for basically similar rationale there. And with Vonleh, like, I'm fine with them giving him the money, even if he ends up not making the roster, which I think is entirely possible. Just if there was no real cost to them, they're still below the tax and all that kind of stuff.
Let's move to the Magic now. Mo Bamba at number 6 was the centerpiece of their offseason. The other big thing that they did was retain Aaron Gordon at 4 years, and I think it ended up being right about $78 million, at least guaranteed with some incentives. I love the fact, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, Danny, and then I loved the fact that they started him because there was really no opportunity cost. They had full bird rights. They weren't going to run into the tax. They started him at $21.6 million. By the end of that contract, with the 8% declines, he'll be all the way down at $16.4 million, making him an excellent potential trade asset. So that, I thought that was a very team-friendly deal. I thought they did very well there to come with an offer that he was willing to sign early in the process rather than testing the market. Now, I would have been very interested to see if another team had come with a lot of money for Gordon, whether they would have been willing to match given what they eventually settled on. And so I thought they did great there. Bamba at 6, this would have been again in the range with Porter, although they have a couple of guys at his position already. Wendell Carter, I said at the time that I thought it more likely that Carter would be the better player, but that Bamba had the higher upside, so I'd probably go with him, even if Carter had the higher median outcome. With the way those guys played in summer league, I that might change that a little bit. I probably would rather have Carter at this point. I wasn't that impressed with Bamba in summer league, although I'd like to watch some more film of him. But I think that was kind of the pick there. I'm not downgrading them for that at all. Melvin Frazier Justin Jackson. Those are guys who in the second round, again, modern players have a chance just with what their purported skill set is to be. And then picking up Grant, Jerian Grant for just nothing from the Bulls, I thought was fine as well. I didn't really understand the Mozgov-Biombo swap, except perhaps maybe that Steve, that seems like one of these things where Steve Clifford was like, I dealt with him in Charlotte and just didn't want to deal with him again, so we'll just get Mozgov instead. So I ended up giving them a B. Not using the mid-level exception was a little disappointing.
And that's a big part of why I gave them a C+. So I really like the Aaron Gordon contract. It's actually 4 years, $76 million as it's projected now. That there certainly could be incentives that can push it higher, but that's how I have it. And they also drafted Melvin Frazier, who I liked a little bit of what I saw from him. It seems like Justin Jackson, actually, they might get on a two-way. He's dealing with some injury stuff. And then they also did these kind of ticky-tack moves where they traded Rodney Purvis for Dakari, and then Dakari Johnson for Jarrell Martin. And so, fine, you know, nothing real big there. But they're, so you talked about the mid-level exception. I mean, they were one of the few teams that had the full mid-level to spend. They were well below the tax. They could have used the whole thing, gotten somebody either for the near term or for the long term or both, you know, however they want to structure it. They have done nothing with it so far. Then the other big problem with them is the point guard position. So they didn't draft one. That's fine. If you take whoever you think is the best player available. And not having a point guard is going to make them worse, which will make their draft pick better. But it also makes it incredibly hard to evaluate a lot of the young guys on this team, especially because the lion's share of the young guys on the Magic are dependent talents. So that means if you're trying to evaluate Jonathan Isaac's offense, if you're trying to evaluate Mo Bamba or even just
Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, Aaron Gordon. You need to kind of know what they look like in a competent offense. And so they're kicking the can down the road on that. I mean, their point guard rotation is probably going to be DJ Augustine and Jerian Grant. Like, that is a big concern. And Steve Clifford, I think, is a good head coach. I am very excited to see what his scheme looks like with his talent. I didn't give them a big bump there, but, you know, he is certainly, he is more established as a coach than some of the other guys that are on the market.
Given where they are as a franchise, I thought that they exceeded expectations.
Yes,
that.
I agree with you. But yeah, they missed.
It's not a sexy job.
They missed
right
an opportunity. They also still have an Elfrid Payton trade exception that I think they can still use. I don't think that was a requirement in the Jarrell Martin trade. But yeah, I think this, like, so Bamba is a fine pick. Frazier's a fine pick. I also am a little bit weird with the Mozgov-Biombo thing just because they're doing that. Oh, and then the other thing, I didn't downgrade them for this, but I considered it, was you made a really good point at, well, I think it was when we were doing their offseason preview, that what Orlando should consider doing is trading their veterans on expiring contracts for either worse players or just guys on different contracts, you know, whatever, however you want to do that. And
yeah, take on bad
take
money.
On bad money.
Your Vucevic,
yeah,
your
Terrence Ross. And
even Fournier on a non-expiring contract. I mean, it does, and it doesn't really seem to make sense that they didn't address point guard, but yet they're also not doing those kind of moves.
Right. Like, you go one direction or the other, and they didn't do either. And that's another missed opportunity.
Yeah. Another thing you might add too, I mean, you'll remember that late in the day before the draft, Trae Young ended up being mocked to them. And it looked like, you know, if that's the guy they really wanted, you know, and Bamba fits in with what they're trying to do too, but I would have obviously liked Trae Young here a little bit better. And it looked like they kind of got outmaneuvered by the Hawks moving down to five to pick him up. Now, you know, should they have tried to move up? You know, I'm not really sure what necessarily they could have done, but, you know, it kind of hurts to just be, have the guy who could have really helped you. And, you know, obviously they needed someone at point guard too. You know, I certainly like Trey better than Bamba at this point. So that's another one that's a little disappointing, although I can't put my finger on how they necessarily could have avoided that. Yeah, I mean, when I gave them the B, I probably focused more on what they did as opposed to what they didn't do. And who knows, maybe they'll do some of the stuff we're talking about at the trade deadline. You just hired a new coach. Clifford isn't the kind of coach who's like, oh yeah, we'll just tank this year. You know, so that doesn't seem to be quite in the plan. You know, maybe they try and then they move those guys in similar deals at the deadline. So I'll stick with the B, but you almost had me changing it to a B minus. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, to not... You know, Isaiah Thomas was rumored there. You know, I don't know why they wouldn't have just, you know, brought him in. I mean, they could have offered him a much bigger role than Denver, and they had plenty of money. I mean, that was the other thing too. It's like, why not just try? And this isn't a team that has massive cap space aspirations in 2019-20 either. So why not just try to get a guy who could be on a good contract with your full mid-level exception? You know, and they didn't do that. So Yeah, you know what? I'm moving him down to a B minus. You mostly and me slightly talked me into it. Let's move to the Sixers now, unless you had something else on
that. The Sixers are a challenging one to unpack because they did a lot of things that kind of are what they are. So they originally had the Miles Bridges.
Can't say that about a lot
of
teams.
Well, no, because it's like, I have strong opinions on it, but I'm not sure it really, like, we'll see what matters. Like, it's a weird thing. Like, the Sixers offseason is hard for me. Because so they drafted.
What stuck out to you the most? You said you had strong opinions.
Okay, so I think that the trade they made, as of what we know right now on draft night, of drafting Mikal Bridges and then moving down to take Zaire Smith and getting Miami's 2021 first. While that first looks worse now because of the aforementioned, the one and done's probably not coming in, or the non one and done's coming in that year. Right now, I still think that's a very good trade for them. I like Mikal Bridges a lot. I need to see more of Zaire Smith, to be sure. But just, I mean, going from, theoretically, again, like we're talking about kind of pick value, going from 10 to 16 and getting an unprotected first is really interesting. But then also, like, there's a little bit of the Muscala TLC Anderson trade that makes me feel queasy. I also don't think very highly from what I've seen of Landry Shamet. I don't know if it's Shamet or Shamet. We'll learn that. I'll learn that before the season starts.
I think it's Shamet.
They also picked up 3 seconds for second round picks that they had in this draft and just moved off of. They didn't really need any more guys, so that's fine. But then they
not only that they didn't need any more guys, it's just they really couldn't have used them even.
Sure, but
you know, so I think it was they almost had a necessity to make those trades, and considering that, I think they did well.
Yeah, they did fine. I mean, the Chicago second could be interesting, and then the two from Detroit. I mean, those are teams that are not really trying to lose, at least not at this point, but that aren't super amazing anyway.
And cash. Don't forget cash.
Oh, I'll forget cash. And then with Wilson Chandler, like Wilson Chandler, interesting player, fits a potential, you know, fits a niche for them. But I also think that they had more leverage than they used here. Like this kind of, you know, they could have gotten Denver to give them something to get off of that. They were desperately trying to offload the money. And Wilson Chandler, you know, like he's reasonable at that price, but he looked a little bit washed at points in last year. So I think they could have gotten something more there. Reddick, totally fine on that deal. You know, that's a positive for them. Amir coming back at the minimum, on board with that. And so, like, I gave them a C+, but I'm sitting there going, and I'm not knocking them for not getting LeBron or not getting Paul George. Those guys just said no. But I think they might get a little bit haunted by not getting Kawhi. Though, if the Spurs, as Zach Lowe reported, were demanding either Simmons or Embiid, then it's not their fault.
Yeah, and I heard from a source as well that was the case, although from one of the teams that was trying to get him, but that's who knows, you know, that's maybe it was just the offers are, but yeah, I mean, certainly the Sixers didn't have anyone available to trade who would have helped the Spurs this year. I think, you know, the Chandler trade was okay. I mean, obviously, once they didn't get their main guys, they wanted to maintain flexibility. Losing out on Nemanja Bjelica was pretty rough.
That's true.
And so they now still have their room exception, right?
Yeah, I believe they do. And so they could use that for a buyout guy, theoretically, the prorated version.
In theory, yeah. Although, given how tight the market was, you might say that it's a failure to not
succeed. Yeah, they could have gotten somebody who could play.
Yeah, I mean, they're and could just help you all year, too, rather than just getting home court advantage, I think, for this team is going to be pretty important. You know, Reddick ended up re-signing for a pretty good deal, 1 year, $12 million. I thought he would go for a lot more than that. Amir Johnson at the minimum is fine. You mentioned the trade of Anderson and TLC for Mike Muscala. You know, Muscala, I think we've maybe forgotten that he has provided some quality backup center play at times because he was injury plagued last year, but he's not quite the level of shooter that I would have wanted. He can't play any four, really. You know, he has played the four, but I wouldn't want him to do that. And he's not really quite the level of shooter to provide the stretch element other than just kind of a stand in the corner and shoot threes kind of guys, which he will make, but he doesn't have much versatility to that jump shot. I agree with what you said about the getting that 2021 unprotected Miami pick. I mean, that, you know, that's got a lot of upside. Could be a great trade value asset, or just one that they could use as well if Miami really starts to go downhill, which I think, you know, could very well be the case, given the fact that they're kind of locked into this team right now. But that's one of those ones where if Bridges looks awesome, then it was a bad trade. And if he doesn't, and Smith doesn't look good, you know, it was a bad trade. But I think as of right now, certainly from just a pure value of picks standpoint, that was great. Jonah Bolden, they brought in 4 years. The last two are non-guaranteed. Also getting Shake Milton to sign a two-way contract was probably pretty good value. I ended up going with the C-minus, though, because this is one of those ones where, hey, you look at what they had to start. And yeah, you know what? They couldn't get Paul George. They couldn't get LeBron. I get that. But if you look at their team this year, are they better than last year? Like, maybe they are just due to internal improvement from their young guys. But with no Ilyasova, with no Bellinelli, maybe they do better. And I was not saying they should have matched that deal for Bellinelli, of course. You know, Anderson and TLC and Holmes, those were cheap guys who maybe weren't great now, but maybe one of them could have developed to the point where they're a contributor. And those are the sort of cheap guys that you need, especially TLC, who had 2 years left on his contract. And Holmes, if they're trying to use cap space next year, his cap space his cap hole is going to be the minimum. So if he had developed, and maybe they could have brought him back as the primary backup center next year. So it's underwhelming. I mean, I was surprised you get, and then bringing in Chandler. Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, he's in theory a good player, but he also looked washed at times last year. They didn't really get much in terms of assets for taking on that salary. So I think they got worse versus where they were at the end of the playoffs last year. And so that gets you a C-minus in my book. Do you think they're better going into this year than they were at the end of last year?
I do.
Other than just their young guys getting better?
I do. I think that they added some depth. You know, like Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli did help them, but I think they got a little bit more versatile with Chandler. And Bellinelli, he punched above his
sure.
weight. So like, that's kind of a different thing. Like, so yeah, maybe yeah. Wilson Chandler doesn't play as well as Bellinelli did, but that was always going to fade away because he's not as good as he was.
Would you rather have had Wilson Chandler or Wayne Ellington and, you know, someone
you don't even
else
need to say the second part of it. I would have rather had Wayne Ellington. I mean,
yeah, I mean, they needed, because, and this is, you'll remember that their bench really struggled offensively last year anytime they didn't have Redick. And so when they brought in Bellinelli and Ilyasova, they finally had enough shooting that some of those bench units with Ben Simmons on the floor without Embiid were actually able to be okay. And so now they're kind of right back there again. Markelle Fultz, maybe he can play some backup shooting guard, but, you know, I'll believe that he can shoot when I see it. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure that the Chandler deal was the best they could have done. I mean, they obviously came to that conclusion. They were in those talks. They knew what the market was. But I mean, I would have even rather. And then there's also, you know, how much do you question the decision to just have a hard line in the sand? We are not taking on any money at all for 2019. You know, I mean, that was part of the problem with Bielitsa, right? Like that he wanted to be somewhere for 2 years and he ended up backing out. You know, I think if they had gotten him, I probably would have given him like a C+. But I think they're just, they've got some holes on this roster. I think it's a little underrated, some of the holes that they have coming off the bench, and especially just in terms of the shooting that they have. I think it's a problem, and I don't think that Muscala is going to solve that as really their, you know, who else do they have as a shooter off the bench right now besides him?
Yeah, it is going to be a
Am challenge. I forgetting somebody? No, I mean, TJ can't shoot at all. Jared Bayless, Gulp, is still on the team. Are they going to have to play him again?
I think they're going to cut him to get a roster spot, and then yeah, but they won't stretch him because they don't have to.
I mean, Shamek can shoot, yeah. But like you're not.
But can he defend? Like, is he good enough to be on the floor?
No, I mean, he's a rookie. Yeah. He's not going to contribute this year. So I'm concerned about the team. They can hopefully fill in, but I think to say that you can count on getting guys as good as Ilyasova and Bellinelli were for them last year on the buyout market.
I would rather have what they had rather than what Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli signed for. You're looking for another Ilyasova and Bellinelli rather than those specific guys.
The Raptors, the Kawhi Leonard trade, just signed Greg Monroe today as well. Although I thought that was, I don't know that he quite gives them what I would be looking for at backup center. I think he doesn't really fit in with the identity of their second unit that they've established as a play fast, defend and run type of second unit. You know, I actually might have wished they just re-signed Bebe instead. But despite that, they got Kawhi, they got Danny Green, they didn't have to give up too much. I basically was debating between an A and an A plus for these guys. I eventually settled on an A.
Straight A. I mean, they didn't, this is the different one where they didn't have a lot of names that changed, but the names that changed are gigantic. I mean, DeRozan, Poeltl being gone, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard being replacing them, and Fred VanVleet at 2 years, $18 million. I think that's fine. You know, that's about, maybe a little rich, but not too bad.
Yeah. And it also looks like they're actually going to be willing to pay the tax this year, too.
Yeah, and so there is a cost that by getting VanVleet, they weren't able to use the tax. It doesn't seem like they're going to use the taxpayer MLE, but I'd rather have Fred VanVleet than who they would have signed there. So like, I get that as a reasonable constraint, considering it looks like they're going to pay the tax. Yeah, and let's briefly on the Monroe thing. I think part of the idea with a backup center is that you want somebody who can eventually, like, so if the starter gets hurt, can go into that. And I would have liked somebody like Bebe better in that role than Greg Monroe, just because his limitations are so severe.
Actually, I like it okay, because he can kind of play similarly as Valanciunas.
Yeah,
like, so you can slide him in.
But I think they can deal with a low usage center too. Like, I think they can use what Bebe does. I would have rather had it. It's not that, you know, I don't think that's going to make a huge difference to him unless Valanciunas misses a ton of time. But we'll see. I mean, he's Greg Monroe at the minimum. I'm cool with that. But they got Kawhi Leonard without having to give up OG Anunoby. They got Kawhi Leonard without having to give up a clean first round pick. And DeRozan, certainly, a very talented player and somebody who made them better over the last few years. Poeltl, intriguing young guy. And there's a chance that they come out of this largely with a wash, that Kawhi Leonard, you know, leaves after this year. Danny Green could leave after this coming season as well. But the worst case scenario is that it streamlines their books. And the best case scenario is that they either get one awesome year from Kawhi Leonard, or he re-signs and they got somebody way better than they ever could have reasonably anticipated. I mean, Kawhi Leonard is a massive, prodigious talent, and that's worth it. That's what gets you an A grade, is you add a potential superstar. Sure, there's some downside risk, and the consequence of doing so is pretty minimal.
Yeah, I second all that. The Kawhi trade, I think, was awesome. We'll see how healthy he is, but even if he's not, you know, I think it's maybe we'll go back and we'll downgrade them. DeRozan has a nice year to say, well, if he's not healthy, well, you should have done a better job of seeing where he was at physically, or just, you know, not making the trade. But unless he just like misses the whole year with injury, or is just, and even if he's like, you know, 90% of what he was, he's still better than DeRozan, I think. They also brought in Nick Nurse as the coach. It didn't seem necessarily like that was quite the plan when they moved on from Dwayne Casey. There was some talk that Mike Budenholzer would have gone there. I wonder how Mike Budenholzer now feels, given that they got Kawhi for the first year. Budenholzer apparently was put off by the fact that the expectations would be too high for him. But he obviously knows Kawhi from Kawhi's first couple years in San Antonio. And they were able to fill out his staff. They got Nate Bjorkgren, Adrian Griffin, Phil Handy, Sergio Scariolo, former Spanish national team coach. So they were able to fill out a fine staff there. Nurse might be an upgrade on Casey, might not be. You know, I kind of rate that as a C. I did think that they needed to move on from Casey. And I think Nurse will be a nice fit for this more modern roster. So even with that, and I think, you know, we'll see how Nurse is. You know, a lot of first-time head coaches, assistants who are already there get elevated. They end up being pretty good. Some don't. So I just don't know how to evaluate that. But at least, you know, Nurse, the things you hear about that he believes in are the right things. In my opinion, we'll see how he handles all the egos and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. You never know. So, yeah, I think give him an A. I don't have much more to say on them.
Oh, the Washington Wizards.
Well, this is funny, actually, that that's your tone, because we may actually disagree on them.
So, I think I would feel completely differently about their offseason. This is probably not fair. I would feel completely differently about their offseason if they hadn't given Dwight Howard that damn player option for the second year.
I knew you were going to say that, like, because I thought about that too, right? And it's just like, all right, you know, I downgraded it. It seems ridiculous that they did that. Who else was offering him that? You know, all the shit that, like, you know, really gets our panties in a bunch. But like that said, I mean, I still think they upgraded for this year. So I ended up giving them a B. I tried to get past that. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, God, that's so stupid. Why did they do that? But I don't think it really matters that much, ultimately.
Well, it matters in this. There are a couple things that matter. One thing also is, by giving Dwight that much money instead of like the minimum or something, they couldn't get anybody else with that money, because Dwight, you know, like Dwight gave, he gave back $5 million. He didn't have to give back $5 million. He didn't have the Nets didn't have the leverage to do that. Like, if he gets the minimum, either that saves Ted Leonsis a bunch of money, or maybe they can use part of the mid-level exception on somebody better.
They subsidize the Nets offseason,
right,
basically.
For no good reason. And, I mean, players, you're not going to see Melo, you know, Melo didn't give back. I mean, he did give back a little bit, which helped the Hawks offseason. We talked about that before. He's taking the minimum because that makes sense. And so I think the overall net of moving Marcin Gortat for Austin Rivers and Dwight Howard, like that, the mechanics of that, I broadly like. You know, we'll see if Austin Rivers added to this locker room, which is chaotic in a different way than last year's Clippers locker room is. We'll see how that works out. I'm very...
Yeah, I mean, this could be the worst locker room in the league. I mean, they did get rid of Gortat, ostensibly in part because he and John Wall weren't getting along, ostensibly in part because Marcin Gortat told John Wall to play defense, which is actually something I probably would have been telling John Wall if I were in that locker room too. But yeah, this certainly could be a bit of a locker room implosion, adding him in and Dwight Howard.
It could be. And then, so the other parts of their offseason, they signed Jeff Green for the minimum, totally on board with that. You know, good, great value for him, could be a part of the rotation. They actually have a strangely deep rotation. I like that they're giving Satoransky the keys to the second unit, though I am a little bit concerned. This is a team that should have a third point guard that is capable, because if John Wall gets hurt, you need somebody who can step in. Maybe they can find somebody. Actually, they could also be a team that should get somebody on the two-way that's actually capable, kind of the Quinn Cook model. But then also they drafted Troy Brown 15th. That's high for him. I don't have a strong feel on him yet, but like the people whose opinions I trust think like Zaire Smith could be better, that there's at least more upside, and some of these other guys. So we'll have to see with that. I didn't downgrade it really that much because I don't have that opinion yet, but we're going to have to see. I just want to mention it. And they took a flyer on Thomas Bryant. I'm totally fine with that. You know, you know, at the minimum claiming him off waivers. That's fine. He looked interesting in the G League. And so I gave them a C-. I, you know, it is kind of an asset proposition thing, but the fact that they could have gotten Dwight for a lot less, I think that might end up mattering. And
maybe we'll see. I mean, that's the incomplete, right? Is like, they didn't do anything to get off of tax money. I mean, it's fine with me. If they want to just pay the tax, fine with me. Like, I don't care if that's Ted Leonsis' money. That doesn't hurt me at all. More power to them. But if it's, all right, we have this budget, we're over this now, and now we gotta, I mean, they've got Jason Smith. Be interesting to see. I mean, they might just consider stretching Smith. They have obviously until August or September 1st, I should say, to do that. Thank God, at least. I guess during the rehearsal dinner, I'll be checking to see whether they stretch Smith or not. But yeah, it's...
If you do that, I'm going to be so angry.
Remains to be seen what happens.
Like,
I think my plan is I'm just like going to just give my phone to my best man and just like he can just like check text messages, and if there's anything important, like, he can tell me.
We'll figure out a better solution for this, but
no, I'm not even talking about like the NBA. I don't like if something important happens in the NBA, I'm going to just ignore it for those 2 days. I'm more talking about like, oh, you know, like grandma like can't find where the reception is or something.
Yeah,
like
that sort of thing. Okay,
and you know, the sort of things that are the point of this.
Yes, podcast. Of course. Hey, people are interested, but yeah. So with Troy Brown, we're just gonna have to see whether the guys, even like Lonnie Walker, could have been an interesting fit. They did get Austin Rivers for 1 year, but you know, we'll see where this team is moving forward. And this is another situation with Washington where I wonder whether this was the time to be proactive. Maybe they just want to see where this team goes for another year to make the move. But I mean, the finances, wow, I just put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, but their finances are just completely screwed long term, and so at some point they're going to need to make a move, and I think they're going to end up worse for wear that they didn't do it now, but I understand why they didn't.
Yeah, and again, I mean, the rest of the league is just so impacted right now that it's just, you know, it seems kind of hard to do anything, and we'll see whether the trade deadline or next summer opens things up. They got the Kelly Oubre's potential extension on the horizon. I think that'll be an interesting bellwether for where they might be willing to go with Otto Porter and what they can get him for. But I mean, I think, do you agree with me that they got better? I think they got better.
Yeah, I think they got better. They might have some downside risk, but I think they got better.
Yeah, so, I mean, unless there's just a complete locker room implosion, but this sounded like they're pretty close to that last year anyway, so who cares? And also, I don't think it's fair necessarily to say that, like, Rivers is a locker room problem. I mean, I think it's more the unique circumstances of him just being the son of the coach.
Well, we'll get a good test of that now.
Maybe he will be, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he will be, but, you know, I don't think it's fair to say he'll be a problem in Washington.
Something I wanted to ask you about. How do you feel about Mike Scott for Jeff Green?
Yeah, I think I would probably rather have... I mean, Scott was a great contributor for them last year, but I think his shooting... I mean, he had one of, like, the highest mid-range field goal percentages in the last 10 years, but I would not have matched that offer of over $4 million from the Clippers, and he certainly was unlikely to shoot as well. He's kind of waxed and waned in that regard during his career. I wouldn't mind them bringing back Ty Lawson if they can. I thought he actually was pretty effective, relatively speaking, although it was annoying that he played as much as he did over Satoransky, but I thought he looked like he still had something left. So yeah, I mean, I think they got better. I think Dwight could be an upgrade on what they got from Gortat last year, even defensively, because Gortat, you know, wasn't any faster than Dwight is basically, and Dwight can at least block shots right at the rim and rebound and offensive rebound.
Here's
not going to do
their
transition D any favors.
I think they're going to miss Marcin Gortat on offense a lot more than some people think.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. You know, I he's a great screen setter. He's kind of good catching the ball further away from the hoop and making a move to the hoop. You know, he and Wall, for all their friction, had pretty damn good chemistry, where Gortat could kind of catch the ball way behind him, have good hands, and then be able to take a step through and lay the ball in. But Howard does provide, even at this point in his career, an alley-oop threat that Gortat didn't necessarily. So it'd be interesting to see whether you're right on that or not. And there's the intentional fouling aspect as well. All right, I think this is probably
Let me plug some stuff
on this.
Yeah. So I put out the first pick protection primer for the 2019 draft at The Athletic. So that goes through all of the remaining protected picks. And so some interesting ones. It was fun to go through that. And then I will also presumably have the next Real GM Radio out before the next time we come, the next episode.
Thanks again to Dollar Shave Club for sponsoring today's program. They deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best, not just shaving. Shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a rear wipe, which I think are an essential these days. Here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. Comes with body cleanser, their One Wipe Charlie's, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the 6-Blade Executive. Keep the blades coming for a few bucks more per month. Add in that shampoo, toothpaste, anything else you need. Don't have to go to the drugstore anymore. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/capspace. That's dollarshaveclub.com/capspace. Let them know that you came from us.